Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Marla and Don were briefing the babysitter before going out for the evening. The baby will probably want her bottle about 10 p.m., Marla noted, and then she'll want to be up with the boys for a while before going back to sleep. Yeah, Don chimed in, responding to the babysitter's surprised look. Sammy is 5 now and Max is 3.5, so they pretty much self-regulate. You know, Marla explained, they're so much easier to put to bed if we just let them stay up and play until they tire out. Sometimes, Don winked, we tire out before they do. From a parent's perspective, how can we help our children get the amount of sleep their bodies need in a way that doesn't turn us into drill sergeants? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our experienced guest can provide us with answers to many of our questions about children and sleep. Dr. Randy Streisand is a pediatric psychologist at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. She co-directs a neurobehavioral sleep clinic doing research on sleep problems in children and has a 6-month-old son of her own. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Streisand.
Hello. Thanks for having me here.
How much sleep do children really need, and how do their needs change as they get a little older?
All children need different amounts of sleep. There's not one specific amount of sleep that a child needs for any age, but there are guidelines that parents can follow in terms of how much sleep the average child of that age would get. And sleep needs do decrease over time. They never decrease completely. Usually teenagers will still need about 8 hours of sleep per night. But when kids are younger, you know, kids are taking naps, so sleep is coming both at nighttime and during the day. And then by about 4 or so, sleep is mostly just during the night. But really, there isn't one particular answer how many hours a child needs.
So there's no need to panic if your child is sleeping 6 hours and the other kid is sleeping 10 hours.
There's no need to panic, but you do want to check in and see, is your child getting much below the average for that age? While there's a lot of variability, if it's affecting daytime function or the parents' function, then that could be a problem.
So pediatricians would be the best people for parents to check with to find out, is this a normal sleep amount?
That would be a good idea, to speak with the doctor.
How important is it that children have a specific bedtime every night? We had our little anecdote about the parents saying, oh, well, they'll just go to sleep when they feel like it. They'll fall down on the floor. How important is it for kids to have a specific time to go to bed?
Well, I think there are two parts to that question. I think it's very important to have a bedtime routine, and that serves the same function as there being a same bedtime. So you want things to be consistent. Consistency is really the key to helping children get a good night's sleep. So you can start with a bedtime. It doesn't have to be to the dot every night. It doesn't have to be 7:30, because you want to take your child's cues and see if maybe they had a later nap one day, they might go to sleep a little bit later. Or if they got up extra early that morning, they might need to go to bed a little bit earlier. But it's nice for kids to know what to expect, and so that they know, you know, 7:30, and I'm just using 7:30 as an example, is bedtime, and that's the time that they know they'll need to be on their own and in their bed getting ready to sleep. So I think it is very important to have a consistent bedtime, but, you know, with anything, it can't be set in stone.
You mentioned having a bedtime routine. Would you clarify that?
Sure. Bedtime routines are the best way to help children get a good night's sleep. And like I said, in terms of there being a specific bedtime, you want a bedtime routine to be consistent also. So one of the keys is to make it the same each night.
So the child knows what to look forward to, what's coming,
exactly.
Calming down.
Mm-hmm. So they know what to expect.
What's part of a routine?
Right. It's good to start a bedtime routine about a half hour or so before you're anticipating leaving the child in the bed or the crib. And you want to do something that's soothing. That's a very important component. So something soothing is, you know, it's different for every child. You might read a book or a story. You might sing songs. You might do a bath. But for some children, a bath could be stimulating, and so that wouldn't be a routine. You know your child best, and so you would figure out what's going to be soothing for them. So you would do something soothing, and you want to include in that routine everything that your child will need before he or she goes to sleep that night. We all know, you know, kids' famous last words, one more drink of water, or let me go to the bathroom one more time. So you want to include getting a drink, going to the bathroom, brushing teeth, changing pajamas, everything that the child might need in order to get a good night's sleep. And an important part of the routine is putting your child in bed while he or she is awake. So lots of parents like to soothe their child to the point that the child is very drowsy or even asleep and then put them in their bed. And that's not a great idea. We want kids to be able to learn to fall asleep on their own. So when you say goodnight to them, you'd like to be able to see their eyes open so that you know that they're going to learn to fall asleep on their own. So the routine would include doing the same thing every night, doing something soothing, making it all inclusive, everything that you think your child's going to need, and basically saying goodnight. So meaning that your child is still awake when you put him to bed.
And there's the period of time, and that period of time ends. In other words, if you're going to read a story, you're going to read a book, or you have a pattern of reading two books, if they're picture books or whatever, and that's it for tonight.
You decide ahead of time, do you do two books? Do you do a song and a book? And sure, you know, some nights you might be flexible and it's okay with you to add an extra one, but it's best to be consistent so that children know what to expect and when you're really going to say goodnight.
Does every child, or grown-up for that matter, have a natural rhythm for waking and sleeping?
Children are very different. There's a lot of variability, so some children will be more early risers. You know, you've heard, and some children like to stay up real late and then maybe get up later in the morning. And children aren't necessarily born with rhythms. I think that they can develop over time and change over time as a function of other activities that kids have. It's more common for the teenagers, say, to be staying up late and then sleeping late on weekends, especially when they can. I think certainly there is a natural rhythm, but I think there's also a role that the environment or that the family plays in determining how much sleep or when kids are sleeping. Mm-hmm.
Stories that we hear now are from parents who maybe both parents are working late and they come home late and they don't want to get the kid from daycare or wherever the kid is and put the kid to sleep. So the kid stays up, you know, by force of this habit till 11 o'clock or some really late hour. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that is something that you hear a lot about right now, is trying to adapt children's sleep schedules to that of the parents. And it's completely understandable for parents to want to keep their children up. If they're getting home from work at a late hour and that's really their time to play with their child, it would be very upsetting to have to put your child to bed as soon as you get home. But I do think there is a significant downside for the child's sleep, because you could be, you know, turning them into someone who's going to be staying up late for many years to come now. And while that might be the best thing for you right now on your relationship with your child, I think over the long run, it's going to be real difficult to get your child into the habit of getting to sleep at a reasonable time and getting up early, say when school is starting. You know, if I'm thinking of, it's probably the parents of younger children who are more like the infants or even preschool who are doing that, where they're keeping them up later. And once kids start elementary school and need to be focusing at class early in the morning, it's going to be hard to do that if they're used to not going to sleep until 11 at night and sleeping later in the morning. So while I think it's real challenging for parents, the best that they can do is really to try to have special time with their children, maybe early in the morning before they leave for work, and then certainly on the weekends. It's hard, but if children sleep well, then they're going to really function much better in all aspects. So sleep is something that everybody needs, and in order for children to grow and develop, they really need to get an adequate amount of sleep and good quality sleep, and it's hard to do that if you're going to sleep real late at night.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about sleep.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Randy Streisand about children and sleep. Maybe we need to talk a little bit about good quality sleep, because as parents we're not exactly sure what that means, but we know that it's probably interrupted in the middle of the night when the child wakes us up.
Well, quality sleep, you don't necessarily know how a child is sleeping. You can assume that a child's sleeping well if you don't hear from your child during the night, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're sleeping the whole night through. Everybody, infants through adults, wakes up during the night. We all wake up during the night, but lots of times we don't have any memory for that because it's just part of our natural sleep rhythms that we are going through our cycles and we're not aware of it. But when infants and then even toddlers are sleeping, if they have a harder time getting back to sleep, when they wake up during that normal sleep cycle change, they might not be able to get back to sleep, and that might be when you hear from them. If their sleep is interrupted during the night because you do hear that they're awake or need you to get back to sleep, then that's going to be less quality because it's not going to be a continuous sleep. You want to look at both overall sleep time, which we, you know, talked about how much sleep a child's getting, and then also how many night wakenings there are. And for children who are waking up during the night, you can guess that their sleep is going to be of a poorer quality than for children who are able to sleep through.
What kinds of problems do arise that play havoc with a child's sleep and, of course, a parent's sleep as a result?
Mm-hmm. Every problem under the sun. So there are many different things that can affect a child's sleep. You name it, that can affect sleep. So a child having an illness can affect sleep. Child being on medication, it could affect sleep. Vacations, you know, if you're off your schedule at all or you change your routine at all, can affect sleep. Certainly if you go across a time zone, that's going to affect child sleep. So any of those kinds of things, even if a child has been sleeping real well for years, could change the child's sleep habits. And it might be just a short-term change while the child's on the medication or you're on vacation. But what happens, unfortunately, is sometimes those problems linger. And you might see problems like nighttime awakening, so child's waking up during the night and needing you, a parent, to help them get back to sleep when you haven't had to do that in years. Or you might see a child having nightmares after maybe an illness, or maybe after seeing something scary on TV, or it might happen you don't have any way of knowing what it came from. There are other kinds of problems that happen during the night, things like having a hard time falling asleep. You know, a lot of kids later elementary school, middle school, that would be a common time to start having some difficulties falling asleep, what we think of when we hear of insomnia.
Is that a developmental thing, or is that something that's connected with something that's going on in their lives?
Well, it's not necessarily developmental. It could be either connected with what's going on in their lives. It could be something that started from either a medication or an illness, or even staying up real late a few nights on vacation from school, and then this developed, and now they have a hard time falling asleep. So there are lots of different sleep problems that happen, not only, you know, keeping kids from being able to fall asleep, but that disrupt sleep during the night. Also, some kids wake up real early, you know, several hours before it's time to get up. And that might be a pattern that starts out when kids are real little, or it might be something that just develops after several years.
Well, now we've put our cuddly little munchkin into bed, mm-hmm. wide awake, well, at least with eyes open, having gone through the whole routine.
Right.
How do you feel about letting babies or toddlers cry themselves to sleep?
When we hear that, I think it sounds like you're doing something awful mm-hmm. to your child. And certainly the goal is to help your child fall asleep on his own and not cry himself to sleep for every night from now until he goes off to college. So I think it's very important for children to learn to fall asleep on their own. And most children will need to have some crying in order to do that, or when they learn to fall asleep on their own. But it's a question of how much crying is okay. So I don't think it's okay if every night for, you know, a month a child cries to sleep. But some children, you know, will cry for even weeks as they're learning to fall asleep on their own. especially if you're doing a program to help your child fall asleep when they're real young, like an infant, then that's part of how they're learning to express themselves and soothe themselves. And crying is a natural part of that. So I think that that's okay. It's usually more of a problem for parents because you don't want to hear your child crying or your cute little munchkin that you've put into bed.
Well, mine all were, of course.
Right. They all are. You need to think about as a parent what you feel comfortable with and what you can tolerate. There are several different techniques, one popularized by Richard Ferber in his book, How to Solve Your Child's Sleep Problems. And you'll hear a lot of parents talking about using the Ferber method now, and that's using a gradual extinction approach where you wait a certain amount of minutes of your child's crying before you go in and soothe your child. So the first night you might wait 2 minutes of crying, and then you'll go in and you very briefly reassure your child. You don't pick your child up. You maybe pat your child and just say, it's okay, it's okay. And then leave, and then you would wait for an increasing amount of time, you know, 3 minutes the next time, 4 minutes of crying the next time before you go back. And that's the first night, and the second night you're starting a little bit after more crying, so maybe after 5 minutes on the second night when you would first go in. So that you can expect to have some crying, but what your child's learning is that the parent is still there and will still be checking in. Your goal is to help your baby learn to fall asleep. Usually, if parents can be real consistent, and it's a very challenging time. You have to do it at a time when you don't have to get up real early to get to work the next day, when you aren't going to be going on vacation the next week. You want to really plan and say, can we be consistent with this program for at least a few days? And usually by, you know, 4 or 5 days, your child will be going to sleep without the crying at all. But you can expect at least a few nights of hearing some crying.
That's so you have hard. To steel yourself for that yeah. kind of thing.
Right. And some parents like to, you know, they'll, if they have a timer, if they're really using this method and they're being serious and sticking to the 2 or 3 minutes, they'll take a timer and they'll go into another part of the house where they can't hear the child crying. They'll use headphones, run the water, do whatever it is that they need to do.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about sleep.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Randy Streisand about children and sleep.
What do you think about the concept, this is going in the opposite direction now, of the family bed, just letting your child climb into your own bed and snuggle up?
Well, it's very popular right now. There are lots of families from all different cultures who are wanting to have their babies sleep with them at night. And particularly, I think, for families where moms are nursing, they think it's very convenient to have their baby sleeping in bed with them. I think it has to be a choice of the parents and of the family, and is this something that they want to do and for the long haul? Because usually it's not so easy to do that just for a few months or a few weeks, because it usually will develop into more of a pattern or a habit if you start to have your baby sleep with you. I think the most important thing for parents to be aware of is issues of safety. That's really the biggest concern about having a baby or a child sleep in bed with you, certainly a baby, because of issues of rollover and things like that. And then parents just have to realize that it will be hard to transition the child to their own bedroom or bed or crib after they get to sleep with mom and dad, because it's definitely more fun to sleep with mom and dad.
I would think it's setting a pattern or a routine opposite to what you're really trying to achieve. You're not indicating to this child, you can be independent, you can fall asleep by yourself.
Right.
You can cuddle during the day, but at bedtime, you're on your own.
I can see how it is convenient for families, especially if when babies are little and they're still eating during the night, then that's more convenient, and also with any protesting, if that's a way to help soothe babies, is to have them in your bed with you, then it's certainly easier. And you know, parents are exhausted, and instead of having to fight and get their kids out of their bed, they just think, well, at least I'll get to sleep sooner if he can sleep with me. But you're right, it's just going to make it harder for when you do make the transition. And you know, I haven't met a family who wants to have their 5-year-old or 10-year-old or 15-year-old sleep in the bed with them. So at some point you are going to make the transition, and it's going to be very, very challenging to do so. I think if your goal is to have your child sleep in his or her own room and fall asleep by himself, then it would make more sense to start out that way. But for some families, they would rather do the family bed.
What about naps? When, how long, until how old?
Naps are very important. They help children get their overall amount of sleep. Certainly you want the most sleep to be happening during the night, but daytime sleep or naps are also critical for children's development. Naps change over time in terms of how many naps and how long those naps should be. Usually at about 6 months of age or 9 months of age, babies will be napping 2 or 3 times a day. And then by about 1 year or 18 months, they might be napping about 1 time a day. So they start at doing 3 naps, and then they transition to 2 naps. And then usually at around 2 years of age, or maybe 1.5, they're doing 1 nap a day, usually just an afternoon nap. And then, you know, it depends on child, but anywhere between 3, 4, and 5, that's when that nap will disappear and you'll just have nighttime sleep.
Do you think that's why they invented preschool? I always felt that the nap time was the only time I could get anything done
all.
And when the naps got fewer and further between, then I really felt quite desperate.
I had a very cute conversation just this morning with a contractor who needs to come and give us an estimate on some work we need to have done at our house. And he's very young, and he has 1 little boy, and his wife is pregnant with a 2nd child. So I said, you know, you've got to come when my husband can be home, because this is his department. It's about stereo wiring and stuff I know nothing about. And he said, well, let's see. My son goes in for his nap at noon Saturday, so maybe I could come then. And I said, well, does that mean you can't bear to leave him until he's taking his nap? He said, you got it.
Aww,
it was so cute.
Yeah. Naps are essential for children, but they also are very helpful for parents. Like you said, you really do count on them in order to get some things done.
Isn't that interesting? Because at a certain age, we have to really push kids to take naps. They don't want to take naps. They don't want that break, and they're falling apart, and they really need a nap. And then when they get to be high school age or older, then they really are really happy to take a nap. But by that point, it doesn't help us out at all.
Naps are very important for children, but you brought up a good point. Once you are past 5, you really don't need to have daytime sleep. And especially for teenagers who like to sleep late on the weekends and maybe take a nap after school, that can actually interfere with getting good nighttime sleep, because that's part of general sleep hygiene. And taking naps can throw off your sleep schedule. So if kids, teenagers, just like adults, have trouble falling asleep at night, you know, they might claim, oh, I can't go to sleep until 2 or 3, and they're napping after school when they get home. So taking out that nap should help them fall asleep a little bit better at night. So naps are good for children, but I don't want teenagers to say, I heard on the radio that I should be taking a nap. That's not what I mean. You know, children, right? Not for the teenagers.
How can we tell if our child has some sort of sleep disorder? What's the difference between wakefulness and real problems?
Well, parents are going to be the ones who really would know, you know, their children best. And if they see a change in the child's daytime function, so if children seem unable to pay attention at school or seem like they're real sleepy during the day, that would be some indication that there's something going on, and maybe it's that the nighttime sleep, you know, isn't going as well as parents thought. When kids have trouble falling asleep at night, if they say it really takes them a long time to get to sleep, and you've, you know, checked on them, say 40, 60 minutes after you put them to bed, and you see that they're still awake, and that happens more nights than not, then that would be an indication that that was a significant sleep problem. If kids are getting up multiple times during the night and are not able to get back to sleep on their own, then that would also be an indicator that there's something more significant going on.
And then your first line of defense is the pediatrician?
I think that makes the most sense. You can talk with your child first to get a better handle on how often does this happen. Is it a one-time incident or is it something that's been going on and you just didn't know about it? And just try to have as much information as you can when you go to your pediatrician. And pediatricians usually are real good at helping solve the sleep problems. And if that, you know, doesn't work out, then there are different facilities where parents could be referred to in order to get extra help.
I think it's always interesting when you have to take a child to the pediatrician to make sure that you have some specifics to explain, because mm-hmm. pediatrician can't figure it out unless you've got the details to describe. Dr. Streisand, what resources can you suggest for parents who want to learn a little more about sleep, sleep problems, and solutions?
There are two books that I recommend to many parents. One of them is called Sleeping Through the Night, and it's by Jody Mindell. And that's available in most bookstores.
Can you spell her name?
Mm-hmm. Mindell. And the second book is Solve Your Child's Sleep Problems, and that's by Richard Ferber, Ferber. And there are two websites that I found helpful for parents as well. And one of them is by Parents Magazine, and that is www.parents.com. And another one is by Baby Center, which is www.babycenter.com. And they both have sleep experts who will answer specific sleep problems as well as offering guidelines for children's sleep at different ages.
Well, you have given us so many guidelines and so much help. All the parents out there who are rubbing their eyes and trying to stay awake because they haven't had enough sleep. Dr. Randy Streisand, we appreciate so much your coming today.
Thank you. I enjoyed being here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And mention this is show number 143. Tell us also, if you'd like, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, you can visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.